Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. We have a lot to talk about today.
We do. Today on our show, we welcome Senator Reggie Thomas, who is the senator from the 13th District in Lexington, Kentucky. Senator Thomas was a candidate for the 6th District of the United States Congress in Kentucky. He lost that race, but he came on to talk to us a little bit about what it was like to run for U.S. Congress. It was a very interesting and good conversation. We talked about that, and we talked about his role currently as a state senator. He's not on the ballot this year, but it was very good to catch up with him and hear that perspective from him.
I agree.
Yeah, excellent. But before we speak to him, before we play that interview, we have some stuff to talk about. This week, Jasmine, was Fancy Farm.
Fancy Farm.
It was good Fancy Farm. There's stuff to talk about this year. We didn't really talk much about it last year because it was pretty boring. But this year, good stuff happening. But then we also have other more newsy items. Jasmine's going to talk to us a little bit about the adoption czar. We talked about that in the past, but we have more information about that now. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the State Board of Education and Hal Heiner taking over as chair. And we have some quick hits. So without any further ado, let's talk about Fancy Farm. Jasmine, the first Saturday in August has come and gone, and another Fancy Farm is in the books. We did not go, but I watched it on TV. The high in Mayfield on Saturday was 91. I didn't feel like driving all that way and sweating all that much.
Maybe if our Patreon gets a lot of money, we could raise money to go one
year. Gas money? Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe
that would
be
great.
Maybe we can send a field reporter.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. In case you hear about it, maybe you've heard the term Fancy Farm before, and you don't know what the heck people are talking about. You've been paying attention to Kentucky politics for maybe a shorter period of time or maybe a long time, and you just, don't really know what the heck people are talking about when they mention Fancy Farm. But Fancy Farm is a Catholic picnic in the St. Jerome Parish out in Graves County in the Jackson Purchase region of Kentucky. That's the far western region of Kentucky. And that picnic dates back more than 100 years. And for at least most of the 20th century, politicians have been invited to speak at this event, and they've been invited from both sides of the aisle, and they have to face supporters from both parties. It's pretty raucous.
Mm-hmm.
It's a raucous event that has seen several politicians lose their cool, and some drop some pretty epic one-liners. There's famous moments throughout history. Wendell Ford was very, very good at it. Senator Mitch McConnell is a favorite out there because he's actually pretty good at this event. And Jack Conway cussed a couple years ago. That was very dramatic. Things are always happening here. There's also several peripheral events that go on during the Fancy Farm weekend, including the Democratic Party bean supper that happens the night before. That's another thing. If we're gonna go, they gotta give us something other than beans.
Right. I'm kind of jealous of the Republican event, which is the Republican Party breakfast.
Yeah.
I'd rather get breakfast than
some bean
dinner.
But you know what? Maybe these beans are good. We need to go and check out the beans for sure. But Jasmine, during these peripheral events, sometimes news breaks. And this year was no exception to that, as Senator Mitch McConnell announced officially that he was seeking re-election in 2020.
Which was expected, but this was the official announcement.
It was the official announcement. And what wasn't known about the campaign for Mitch McConnell's most recent Senate campaign is that Jonathan Schell, who's still currently the House Majority Leader, but who has lost his seat in a primary election, Jonathan Schell is going to serve as Mitch McConnell's campaign chairman. A lot of people say this is a potential launching pad for a statewide race, and I think that Jonathan Schell will more than likely make some sort of statewide race sooner rather than later, having lost his seat in the state legislature. On the Democratic side, it was thought that perhaps there would be a gubernatorial candidate declaration or two. But when the usual suspects were asked, Adam Edelin, Allison Lonergan Grimes, Rocky Adkins, they all said that they were focused on the election in November. And at this point, I kind of wonder if Andy Beshear regrets jumping in so early.
Right. Among all of those people that you named, the thing that was consistent is they all criticized him for announcing while we have these huge state house and Senate elections coming up in a couple months.
Yeah, you're sucking the money out from all these people that are trying to run.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, his strategy there was to kind of clear the field and see how much money he can raise. And that may still be the case. We'll see how much money he manages to raise in the quarter. But that can also be turned around against him. Anyways, during the bean supper, Allison Lonergan Grimes, she dropped perhaps the most brutal line of the whole weekend. Did you see this before?
I did.
Oh, my goodness. This is what she said. Quote, "Many folks say that Rand Paul can't be beat. They're worried he might be too well-liked. I don't buy that. Just ask his neighbor. He can be beaten." Which, that's pretty mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a great joke, but I guess the question is whether she crossed the line. or not. And I have to think about it, like, would I be mad if a Republican said this about a Democrat? And I might be. So I don't know. I think it's very close to the line.
Right. And I think I probably would act like I was mad, but actually on the inside be laughing a little bit.
Right. It's a good joke.
Yeah.
No matter who you are.
And I think, you know, people hate to talk about the discourse or whatever,
but
the discourse has, you know, with Donald Trump as the president, I think you can pretty much get away with getting a little closer to that line. Than before. But this joke, I had to say, I stopped a little bit and kind of laughed a little bit when I saw it. So, Jasmine, during the actual event, we heard from folks running in Western Kentucky, including Paul Walker, who's the Democratic candidate for the 1st United States Congressional District, and Charlotte Goddard, who's the candidate for the 2nd Kentucky House District. Jasmine, they're both underdogs by far. They're not expected to win, but they did really well, I think, given the atmosphere. These are amateur politicians.
Right. I heard a lot of good feedback about Charlotte Goddard during Fancy Farm.
Yeah, she said she had a lot of good stuff to say. And also, you know, at that point, the crowd was really riled up. The Republicans were chanting socialist at her. And she managed to get her point across, I thought, very well. And I also thought Paul Walker, who is, you know, not the guy from the Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
not
movies.
That guy. But the guy, he is a professor at Murray State. You know, both of these people are not like well-seasoned politicians. They're just people that are running for office because they think it's the right thing to do. And they stood up and, you know, Paul Walker also had a little bit of a brutal line. Jamie Comer, the 1st District Congressional Representative from Kentucky, he got up and said that he thinks that more able-bodied men should be working if they're going to receive Medicaid benefits, you know, throwing his support behind the Medicaid waiver. And Paul Walker says, I think we should have more able-bodied men in Congress, which, you know, was a little,
ooh.
Yeah, right. So, but anyways, a little bit of a decent zinger from somebody who doesn't have a lot of practice with this sort of stuff.
R.I.P. to the Fast and Furious Paul Walker.
Yeah, he's dead now. Yeah, that's true. The big speeches, though, Jasmine, were given by Mitch McConnell and Mike Harmon, who's the state auditor on the GOP side. Ryan Quarles was the MC of the event, which was a little weird. He also kind of gave a Republican speech as the MC, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then Andy Beshear and Allison Lundergan Grimes gave speeches on the Democratic side. Mitch McConnell worked hard to frame Democrats as far to the left, citing his experience with DSA protesters in Louisville and Washington, where they kind of chanted him out of restaurants. That's something we've talked a little bit about. And after his speech, Republican spectators taunted the rest of the Democratic speakers with a socialist chant, which was a little weird, I think.
I think that's the road that Republicans are going down. Mm-hmm. I think we're probably going to mention this later, but Andy Barr came out with a campaign ad that was supposed to be like an attack ad on Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath about how left and liberal she is.
Right.
And it maybe is a pretty good ad for her.
Right. I mean, I don't. Yeah. You know, it's definitely the path that they're trying to trot. They've got a tough road to hoe this year. But I think that's the tried and true strategy that's worked in the past. I don't know how it will work this year. Andy Beshear, though, he gave a pretty good speech. He tried to start a hashtag that's not Kentucky thing. But Jasmine, I don't think that's not going to happen.
I saw a lot of Fancy Farm coverage, and I haven't seen that hashtag. So I think you're right.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. But he did give it a good shot. You know, Jasmine, Andy Beshear does a lot of good stuff. I think he's a good attorney general, but he's not really the best speaker of the potential candidates. And given that handicap, I think he did pretty well. But in my opinion, the best speaker by far was Alice Lundergan Grimes. After she said that line about Rand Paul, when she gave her actual speech, you know, the Fancy Farm event's a place to get in your best one-liners while putting forth a good message, and you have to kind of balance those two things, and Secretary of State Grimes did that really well.
And in the past, I think that's something she hasn't done that well.
That's absolutely
when
true.
When she's made media appearances, when she ran against Mitch McConnell, I think she became known for making like cheesy bad jokes, and I think this was so much better. It's a huge improvement.
And when we were talking about her joke from before, I would much rather have somebody like dance a little closer to that line and be dangerously close and maybe cross it rather than somebody so stilted and not as exciting.
Sure.
Right. So her jokes, you know, during the speech, they weren't as brutal as the Rand Paul joke from the day before, but they landed pretty well. These are some good jokes. They said, quote, not only am I having a baby this year, but I also have a big birthday. 40 will not only be my age, it's Matt Bevin's dream approval rating.
Which, oh, dang.
Yeah, you know, they're fancy farm jokes. And another quote, right now, Mitch had to leave. And, this is an aside. Mitch McConnell often comes, speaks, and then doesn't stay for the event. He just leaves.
Right. I mean, yeah. He doesn't have to go. So I guess it's cool that he goes, but he does always leave early.
Right. So, okay, here's the quote. Quote, right now, Mitch had to leave because he is very busy rushing a Supreme Court. It's so sad. Like many men, he suffers from premature confirmation. And like a man, he claims it never happens to him. Unquote.
That was maybe one of the best ones.
I think that that's a good joke, you know, even for not Fancy Farm. That's a, you know, yeah, we should start. Hopefully the National Democrats pick up on that and start saying Mitch McConnell suffers from premature confirmation. but besides the joke, she actually focused in on political issues. She mentioned the sexual harassment scandal engulfing Jeff Hoover and the other Republican legislators. She mentioned the Capitol access policy. And she mentioned medical marijuana, which is things that she's focused on in the past.
Yeah, I was going to say medicinal marijuana has been her thing lately.
Recently. Yeah, but her strongest words were about her own role as a woman in politics. Jasmine, she announced very recently that she was pregnant. And when she did that, there were lots of murmurs that that would cause her to not want to run for governor. And she said in her speech, this is kind of towards the end, she said that she would absolutely be back on the Fancy Farm stage next year. And then she said, quote, for any man on the right or the left of this stage who doubts that reality, I hope you will join me in reminding them that women do more than just have children, unquote. So, you know, I thought that that was a pretty strongly worded indication that she's going to run for governor. But also, I think it's a pretty powerful message. And you know, 2018 in many ways is the year of the woman candidate. And,
definitely.
And I think that she's, you know, the most visible female politician in the state of Kentucky. Jasmine, one other nice thing about this year's Fancy Farm was that both Representative Atticus Scott and Charles Booker, the candidate in Louisville that we've spoke to, made the trip out there to Western Kentucky, far Western Kentucky. It's not that common to see many elected officials from Louisville at the event at all. And it's also incredibly rare to see a speaker of color during the Fancy Farm event. Now, Jasmine, in many ways, that is directly related to the lack of candidates of color for statewide office and really for office in Western Kentucky.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because the slate is kind of set. It's you know, if the governor wants to come, if any statewide officials want to come, and then people who are running for office in Graves County. But yeah, we haven't really seen speakers of color in either the main event or the peripheral events. I think the Democratic or Bean Supper did have an invocation given by a black pastor. But other than that, I don't know if anybody else was a person of color that spoke. Folks in Western Kentucky talk about how the event is great because it connects state government to the folks in the farthest flung areas of the state. But I think that we would all benefit from seeing a more diverse set of speakers at both the central event and the events surrounding Fancy Farm.
Yep.
So
definitely.
Good on Representative Scott and for Charles Booker for going out there and making their faces known and making it known that, you know, they do belong in this kind of space. Okay, Jasmine, tell us more about the new adoption advisors.
Okay, so last year we had an adoption czar. That position was terminated in January. His contract was terminated and the governor basically said, we're going to go in a different direction. So now Matt Bevin has hired a couple, Chris and Alicia Johnson, to serve as state adoption advisors. So they're no longer czars, they're advisors.
Yeah, we didn't want to get connected to the Russia thing.
Right.
And yeah, Matt Bevin doesn't get along with Rand Paul, apparently.
And so they're going to be making $82,000 each to serve as state adoption advisors. Bevin's office is not who released the salaries, but those salaries were confirmed by a spokeswoman for the Finance and Administration Cabinet. So the couple has 10 children, 7 of whom are adopted, and they've also fostered over 40 children. The husband, Chris Johnson, is a Baptist minister and is the former lead pastor of Liberty Baptist Church in Florida. So this is a very conservative Baptist church. I looked it up, and they dedicate a section of their belief section of the website for human sexuality.
Never good.
So based on reading that, I'm going to say that the Johnsons do not support LGBTQ couples adopting.
Doesn't appear that they would based on their website.
Right. Yeah. Their positions will be advisor positions in the Office of Faith and Community-Based Initiatives. So that office doesn't have a budget, though. So it sounds like they are being paid out of the Cabinet for Health and Family Services budget. The Cabinet has agreed to pay as much as $700,000 for the total cost of their work.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Right, it is quite a bit of money, and they're making pretty decent salaries for this. Not as much as the adoption czar was being paid. So,
but there's two of them, right? So that's like $160,000,
right?
And the adoption czar was getting paid pretty close to that, right?
I think he was making like $200,000.
Oh, really? Okay, well there you go. Yeah, he's paid even more than that. That's wild. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, you are right.
The news release said that they will be working with churches to enhance child welfare. So to me, what this sounds like would be going to churches and speaking and encouraging adoption, and then maybe like connecting them to certain adoption agencies. So that's something that's pretty common, especially in like Baptist churches. You know, they have speakers about adoption and...
Well, a lot of conservative Christians put a lot of emphasis on adoption, but I don't know about like whether or not hearing from state people about the adoption program by the state going into churches like that. That seems, I don't know. To me, that seems a little weird.
Right, but they're part of the Office of Faith and Community-Based Initiatives.
Though. Right, I guess that's true. That's true. I wonder if they'll go to like synagogues or mosques.
Right, I don't know. Chris Johnson has served as the president of an adoptive parent association, and he's also been on the board for an adoption association. Other than that, and the fact that they have adoptive children and they've done speaking engagements before, I'm not really sure what other kind of qualifications this couple has and whether they've... I don't think that they've worked in adoption or done any foster care or adoption policy work or things like that. And I guess my concern is they may have some adoption related experience, and they've fostered a lot of children, but I don't know what their goal would be as far as reforming the foster care system.
Right. And I mean, the parents of adoptive children, that's a very important part of the adoption process. You know, a very, very important part. And foster care, supporting the people who are fostering children is super important. But that's only part of the equation, right? I mean, you have all of the so hard decisions about, you know, terminating parental rights and all those decisions about, you know, when you have rights to your own children. That's such a hard place to be, and probably requires expertise that maybe these people don't necessarily have, right?
Right. And when a child comes into custody of the state, there's always a goal with every child, and it's either the goal is to reunify with family members or the goal is to have them adopted. Mm-hmm. And there are kind of two schools of thought about adoption and foster care, and oftentimes more conservative people believe that more children should be adopted.
Right.
But there's also this piece that children have this biological attachment, you know, mm-hmm. to their family.
Right.
And being taken away from their family permanently can have all these negative impacts. So they seem to be very pro-adoption, and the children that they have adopted came out of foster care. They fostered them and then adopted. So, you know, I'm not sure what all they're going to do. The news release only talked about working with churches to enhance child welfare, but I don't know what that's going to mean.
Right.
And, you know, just as a final note, state social workers make on average $33,000 per year, and we're paying people a lot of money to be advisors.
So that's like five and a half, almost six social workers or two adoption, what are they, advisors. So.
Right. You know, the salary is better than what we were paying the czar, who wasn't with us for very long.
Right, right.
So, but it's still a lot of money, and the cabinet's going to pay $700,000 for the work that they're going to do, but we don't really quite know what that is going to be yet.
Yeah. Well, we'll pay attention to this as we have been. All right, Jasmine, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Hal Heiner. Way back in April, which is before the State Board of Education stated their desire to take over JCPS schools, and even before the State Board of Education released their audit of JCPS, and even before Kentucky Education Commissioner Stephen Pruitt was fired, the whole saga involving all of these things began when Hal Heiner was inserted into the State Board of Education by Governor Bevin. Hal Heiner is a former Louisville Metro Council member who ran for governor in 2015 and came in third during the GOP primary behind Matt Bevin and Jamie Comer. Heiner then went on to become the Secretary of Education and Workforce Development in the Bevin administration. Education was one of his key issues during the gubernatorial campaign, and Heiner has been a persistent critic of JCPS and an advocate of charter schools. So when Heiner resigned his cabinet level position to take over as a member of the State Board of Education, it was pretty clear that, you know, he was going to be the chair. You don't just leave a cabinet level position just to serve on a board, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But regulations had to be changed in order to allow him the opportunity to serve as chair. The rules of the State Board of Education require a certain amount of service on that board before a person can become the chair. And the board changed that rule, and they voted for Heiner as the chairman of the State Board of Education. So, Jasmine, Heiner's elevation to the chairmanship gives him the ability to set the agenda for the board. And his chairmanship will certainly mean that no matter the outcome of the takeover attempt, whether, you know, it's potential that the JCPS school system will prevail over, you know, that mm-hmm. certainly possibility exists with the specter of judicial review hanging over the whole situation. But even if the JCPS does prevail in that, that means that the Board of Education, the State Board of Education, is going to continue to fight for conservative change to the education system.
Right, so the school choice agenda.
Right, that's
vouchers, charter schools,
all that sort of stuff. Elimination of the assignment plan to Jefferson County, all that sort of stuff. Jasmine, here's the thing. You know, Hal Heiner, he's eminently qualified to be the chair of the Board of Education. He knows about education policy, and he's not Betsy DeVos. You know, he's not the federal education, the Secretary of Education. He actually knows a lot about education policy, and he spent a long time working in the field of education. However, he does represent a strident ideology when it comes to education, and I have serious doubts about his ability to work with people who disagree with him. You know, the entire policymaking process around education seems to be somewhat broken. The State Board of Education all turned over at one moment, and all of the people came on were Bevin appointees. He's basically appointed the entire board, the entire State Board of Education, and now has inserted this like conservative ideologue who knows a lot about education into the chairmanship. So, it's going to take a while. Even if Democrats do manage to take back the governor's mansion, it's going to take a while to unwind all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jasmine, before we get to our interview with Reggie Thomas, Senator Reginald Thomas, we have some quick hits to talk about. Jasmine, you mentioned Andy Barr's ad that went on the air recently, but both Andy Barr and Amy McGrath are on the air with new commercials this week. Barr's newest ad, which is his second, is heavily negative. So his first ad was basically his wife and his children like talking about how much he cares about Central Kentucky and all the places that he's gone to show his support for the region. But this one is very, very negative. It gives all these quotes for Lieutenant Colonel McGrath where she says, like, I am a feminist. I am a progressive. I voted for Barack Obama. And then says that she is too liberal for Kentucky. Amy McGrath's ad is a two-minute, incredibly positive message highlighting her military service. There are things getting bombed in the ad, which, you know, some people are a little uncomfortable with, but by and large, it's a biographical ad about her life, about her overcoming obstacles in her career that I thought was a good message that will resonate well with the voters of the 6th District. I just think it's so interesting. You know, so many people across the state have been like, if you run as a liberal, they'll tag you as this, and it will be like so bad if you get tagged as a liberal. And this is going to be such an interesting test case. If you're going negative this early in a campaign, it means you're in trouble. And we'll see if this negative tact gets Andy Barr any traction.
And when he posted the commercial on Twitter, she kind of came back at him and was talking about how she sat on a runway on 9/11 with missiles strapped to her F-15 and asked him what kind of sacrifices he's made.
Yeah. Which I thought those were strong words, fighting words, if you will. Some people were a little turned off by that, but I think that was strongly worded, and I thought that was very resonant to me as a really good comeback to his ad. There's also this concept of the Twitter ratio, where you know there's the ratio of the responses to your tweet to the retweets. So responses are thought to be a little bit more negative, where people might be like saying, "No, you're wrong."
Mm-hmm.
And retweets are just an unabashed message of support. And Andy Barr really got ratioed. He had way more responses to that tweet than he did retweets. And Amy McGrath's ratio was much better. Lots more retweets than responses. Jasmine, Twitter is not real and not indicative of political performance. But if you want to use that as a metric, it was a good one for Amy McGrath. Jasmine, next. Republican House leaders are calling members of Steve Beshear's cabinet, the last gubernatorial administration, to the carpet about contracts for the Kentucky Wire Project. We did a whole show on the Kentucky Wire Project. You should go back and listen to that if you want to know what that is about. Jasmine, the Republican House leaders are concerned that the contracts related to the project were too favorable to contractors. So now they're exercising their oversight ability to yell at these people and try to figure out why the contracts were written in the way that they were. Jasmine, lastly, JCPS was given an extra week to respond to Education Commissioner Wayne Lewis's offer of a settlement. Although there have been two executive sessions for JCPS's school board, they have yet to announce their response. This is something that could potentially happen between the time that we are here recording.
Right, because we're coming up on the end of that extra week.
Yeah,
right?
we are, and we don't know what could happen. You may know about this, more about this than we do right now. And then lastly, another late breaking thing. We've talked a lot about Confederate statues in the state of Kentucky, but you know, I just heard on the radio on the way driving over here that Mayor Greg Fisher in Louisville is going to move two statues, including the John Castleman statue in the Cherokee Triangle, away from those areas, and it's potentially looking, exploring different places to put them, and a leading contender up front is the Cave Hill Cemetery. Sort of following in the footsteps of what Jim Gray did with the Confederate statues
there.
That's
good news.
Absolutely. All right, Jasmine, that's enough of this. Let's get to our interview with Reggie Thomas.
State Senator Reginald Thomas represents the 13th District, which covers much of Lexington. Senator Thomas is a native of Lexington who left to earn degrees at both Dartmouth and Harvard Law. Recently, Senator Thomas was a candidate for the 6th U.S. Congressional District. He was first elected to state Senate in 2012, and he became the first African-American to represent Fayette County in the state Senate. Senator Thomas, welcome to my Old Kentucky podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be with you and Robert, and looking forward to a very spirited discussion.
Awesome. We're glad to have you.
So let's start by talking about the recent primary for the 6th Congressional District. You ended up coming in third behind Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath and Mayor Jim Gray. You raised significantly less money than the other two candidates, but you did provide a unique perspective that differed from the other candidates. So just right off the top, if you could make the decision again today, would you run for U.S. Congress?
Well, given the information that I knew at the time I ran, I would have run. As I said, often on the campaign trail, like many people in this country, I woke up on the morning of Wednesday, November 9th, 2016, very dismayed at the realization that Donald Trump was going to be our next president, and nothing has happened since that time that has changed my worries at that point. We really do need, as a country, I would say, to put a check, to put a roadblock on President Trump and his policies and his actions. And one way to do that is take back control of the House. That's why I ran. Obviously, I was hoping I would be the candidate, but I will tell you that Amy McGrath is an excellent candidate. You know, as I said the night of my concession speech, and since then, I do support her. I will support her throughout this campaign, and I do hope that she beats Andy Barr, and I believe that she will beat Andy Barr.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of encouraging signs on that topic. I've seen a lot of good stuff coming from her campaign since the general election started. The campaign process is pretty grueling. And, you know, I'm sure you know
it
that
is.
You're nodding your head quite a bit here. You know, but what is one thing that you appreciated about the campaign for this seat, which is bigger than your seat in the state Senate? Yeah. And what is maybe one thing that you're glad to be done with now that this is over?
Well, I would never say I'm glad to be done with anything. You know, I really enjoy the people contact. I enjoy visiting all 19 counties. You know, I visit all 19 counties multiple occasions. Mm-hmm. You know, enjoy getting to know the county and its own unique culture, the people there, you know, their concerns and their interests. And really, when you travel the state of Kentucky, you realize how much more we have in common than we have different. You know, how people really, you know, are concerned about a better life for their children, about being able to provide for their families, you know, how wanting to make sure that this country is working for them and not against them. So as Kentuckians, you know, regardless of a background or our income level or our ethnicity or whatever, we really do have far more in common than we do have, you know, apart or separate. And you learn that when you go around the state. And so I really did enjoy the people contact and getting out there and shaking hands and talking to people throughout all 19 yeah. counties.
Absolutely. And in some ways, the 6th District is maybe the most diverse of all of Kentucky's county or districts. I mean, you have the 1st that covers mm-hmm. a lot of South and Western Kentucky, and you have, you know, the 5th that covers a lot of Eastern Kentucky. I think the 3rd, of course, is just Louisville, but the 6th covers, you know, some parts of it could be considered absolutely Eastern Kentucky. A lot of it's considered the bluegrass. You have different kinds of people from
urban, rural distinctions that you really don't see in a lot of the other right. congressional districts.
Absolutely.
I would agree with this. It is the most diverse. Mm-hmm. Of all the congressional districts.
All right. So one of the reasons that you had a hard time winning was because your opponents had a lot of money. Jim Gray was able to self-fund while Amy McGrath raised more than 7 figures for the campaign, and you raised a little more than $200,000. But even $200,000 is a lot of money. That's close to double what you raised for your competitive elections in the state legislature. Did the amount of time and energy spent raising money keep you from getting your message to voters? And do you think that that's a problem with how we elect candidates?
Well, there's no question that money played a role in the outcome of the primary. And money plays a role in the outcome of most elections.
Right.
I will say this. I actually raised, when you look at the final numbers, about $350,000.
Wow.
Which, when you compare it to all the Democratic candidates nationwide, I was actually in the upper 30%. So mm-hmm. I did better than 70% of all the Democratic candidates in the nation in terms mm-hmm. of raising money. You know, I was up against someone, the winner, who raised the third highest mm-hmm. number of funds of any candidate. Colonel McGrath raised $2.1 million, actually.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Jim Gray, $1.4 million. He was number 7. So my two opponents were in the top 10.
Yeah, what a crazy race.
Of all the Democratic candidates running for Congress in this election. I will say generally, and this has nothing to do with the primary. I want to be very clear about this. It has nothing to do with the primary. But I have made the comment that money is the poison in politics. And I can't wait for the day. I hope I live to see it when we reverse Citizens United mm-hmm. and get that case reversed and no longer the law of this land. Mm-hmm. Because that case is done. Is that it has paralyzed our politics. I mean, it has made Washington dysfunctional now. Our federal government is no longer functional because the role and influence that money has in politics. And we begin to see that move downward into the states
mm-hmm.
and how state elections now are heavily influenced by money and how, to some degree, states have become, to a lesser degree, I would say, paralyzed mm-hmm. by the amount of money in politics. We have got to get money out of politics in this country. We've just mm-hmm. got to do it.
And I think where we are right now at the Supreme Court, the day that Citizens United gets overturned may be a long time away. We're not in a great position right now, yeah. but I hope so too.
Jasmine, I would agree with that. It's not going to happen anytime soon mm-hmm. with Trump's appointees to the Supreme Court, but we've got to have that day.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Supreme Court may be getting further away, but there's always legislative fixes that we could put in place. Mm-hmm. And I think that just necessitates good people like you, Senator Thomas, running for office
at the
federal level. Absolutely. So, you know, the campaign for the U.S. House for you is over, but you are still an elected official. And much of the time you were campaigning, you were also serving in the state Senate. So you had an upfront view of the debacle that really was this year's legislative session. So I guess that this year was your 6th session that you've
fifth
served.
Session. Fifth session.
Okay,
yes.
Fifth session in Frankfort. So on the whole, have you really ever experienced anything quite that? Was anything worse than that this year?
Oh, no. This was the absolute worst session. And you're right. I did have an up-close view of that. I will never forget March 29th of this year when we begin to hear word that the Republicans were going to file a pension bill. We didn't know where it was going to come from. They met in a conference room right off the Senate chamber.
Mm-hmm.
It's room 329. And all of a sudden, this bill that was designated a pension bill, designated a sewer bill, that mm-hmm. became the pension bill. And it was like a 290 some odd page bill. I mean, you couldn't read it all. You couldn't have read it all in a day, mm-hmm. let alone read it all in 15 or 20 minutes, which those House members at the time were being asked to do because it first came before a House committee. And to see artistic process get so low and so just disgusting, where they're trying to ram something through without the people knowing about it, without legislators being able to being given the opportunity to read it, without there being any kind of public discussion. I mean, that was just an abuse of power. I don't know how to put it any other way.
No, that's true.
And of course, the House committee along partisan lines voted it out of committee. It went to the House. They voted on it. And I got to tell you an interesting story about me. That evening, I had promised my son Leonard, who teaches at Jefferson Community and Technical College here in Louisville, that I would be the guest speaker at his award ceremony. And of course, being the father, being my son, you know, I didn't want to cancel on him. So, and it was raining that night too. So I, right after the House passed the bill and before it came to the Senate, I drove down here to Louisville. I gave about a 15-minute talk at the Jefferson Community Technical College Honor Ceremony. Then drove, and I have to admit this on radio, drove about 90 miles an hour back in rain to get to Frankfort in time to discuss that bill on the Senate floor.
Yeah, that's Allison Leonard and Grimes speed over there.
I made it from Louisville to Frankfort in 38 minutes from downtown Frankfort in the rain, because it was just so important for me to get back and speak against that bill and talk about what a dark day that was. Mm-hmm. In the history of the Kentucky General Assembly. And that was indeed a dark day.
Yeah, it certainly was.
We've spoken to several members of the House on our show, but you are only our third senator. We've had Senator Whitney Westerfield.
Oh, that's right. I forgot
Senator
about that. We
Morgan
had
McGarvey.
Senator Westerfield. Second Democratic senator.
Right.
That's okay.
When we had Senator McGarvey on the show, he talked about how difficult it is to be in the minority part of Kentucky's legislature. There's no filibuster like there is in the federal government, and there isn't even a walkout provision like many other state governments have. Tell us how you work to be an effective senator in the minority party.
Well, Senator McGarvey is right. It is difficult. Morgan is my seatmate,
and
we share a lot of the same political philosophies. And I think very highly of Senator McGarvey. And he's right. It is difficult. But when you're there, you really have to form alliances and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Success in the General Assembly is all about relationships and having relationships and being able to work with people. And I have found that I have had success in terms of talking to my colleagues, my Republican colleagues there in the Senate, and working with them and you know, trying to at least present my views on certain policies and get them to see, you know, how certain bills can be changed that I think are better for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some success doing that, although I haven't passed a lot of legislation
myself.
The only legislation I've passed is a breastfeeding bill
that
encouraged the legislature to look at ways to allow mothers of newborn children to be able to breastfeed both in public accommodations and in the workplace. I'm very proud of that legislation. But it's relationship building, and I have good relationships, I think, with all of my colleagues in the Senate. But, you know, it is tough. And, of course, there's certain policies that I'm not going to get heard on, like the charter school bill back in 2017. I mean, I think that is horrific legislation. And I really hope it doesn't destroy the Jefferson County Public Schools, which I think is we're gonna really see that battle play out here in Jefferson County this 2018-2019 school year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously that's one legislation where my inability to work with my Republican colleagues on the Education Committee, I think I would like to see them be more cooperative than they were.
Right.
But it is all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And obviously some essential legislation or essential policies or let me put it like this, some really important policies like charter schools or right to work or minimum wage, which obviously I'm pushing for. You know, those kind of political battles, I'm just not going to get anywhere with them. Mm-hmm. But others, what I would call less, I don't want to use the word hardened, but where there's more flexibility,
Right. Uh-huh. I think, you know, maybe like criminal justice reform yes. is one of those.
Yes. Right.
Where you can have your voice heard and you can make a difference. And again, I will certainly say publicly, and this is true, that I think I do have a good relationship with all mm-hmm. the Republican senators in the chamber.
I always think that's so interesting where, I mean, politicians on both sides of the aisle can be so, you know, frustrated and annoyed and angered by things that get passed when certain parties are in the majority, and we just talked about the pension bill and the budget and such. But then at the same time, turn right around and have to work with them on other issues, and that's got to be a difficult thing to do. But at the same time, you know, it's what's required of doing this job.
I tell you, Robert, it does get frustrating. For instance, you take a bill like House Bill 169 this year, mm-hmm. the gang bill,
right,
which made it far easier to make a collective group of people a gang.
Mm-hmm.
And I think other people have said this too, that's going to have a very negative impact mm-hmm. on minority communities and poor communities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to argue vociferously against that bill and really put your heart into it,
mm-hmm.
get defeated, and then 2 minutes later, turn around and support a bill that is relatively minor in comparison to something like that, and say no, this is a good piece of legislation that should pass.
Right. Right.
There are those emotional swings mm-hmm. that I feel all the time, but I always remind myself that I'm there to do the people's work, mm-hmm. cut the people's will, and I cannot let my own emotions and sometimes my frustrations get in the way of what I think is doing right for the people.
Absolutely. Well, here on our show, we really think fiscal issues are a big deal for Kentucky, especially the lack of revenue for the state government. The biggest champion of tax reform in the House, Representative Jim Wayne, he's leaving the legislature next year. However, there seems to be a good number of candidates running on this issue. You know, out on the campaign trail, I see people all the time talking about the need for revenue and the need for a better budget. How big a priority do you think tax reform is for Kentucky Democrats? And do you think that the issue is a big enough priority in the Democratic caucus of the legislature?
Well, Robert, I will tell you, I would make one change in your statement. I think tax reform is a big issue for this state, period.
Sure.
Because, Robert, we do not have enough money in Kentucky to really run our state. We are at least, and I've said this many times publicly in many different forums, that we are at least $1 billion underfunded structurally, and maybe more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We don't have enough money, Robert, to fund education properly in this state. I don't care what the Republicans said about how we had a record funding in SEEK.
Mm-hmm.
We cut funding and education in this session. Make no mistake about it. When you total what we cut for transportation, for safe schools, for textbooks, mm-hmm. we cut funding for education in the state. Here's something that I want all your viewers to understand. I make this point everywhere I go. Kentucky now is the only state in this nation that for 12 straight years will have decreased funding for higher education.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm.
We're sending a signal throughout this nation that if you come to Kentucky, we don't value you going to college. We don't think it's important that our children get a college education. We are now funding higher education. Get this, Robert. Well, let me make this my point this way. This year, this month, first-time freshmen going to college will have all in Kentucky will all have been born in this century. Mm-hmm. You're talking about people who have been born in 2000 now going to college. So we're talking about every first-time freshman having been born in the 21st century. And yet we're funding higher education. Those going to University of Louisville, UK, you know, my home district, as if it were 1994. We're funding 21st century children as if it were 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
that's you're right, Jasmine. That's a sad indictment on the mm-hmm. Commonwealth of Kentucky. But that's what we're doing here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Tax reform is not important for the Kentucky Democrats. It's important for Kentuckians, period.
Right. Thinking of education instead of more of a K-12 situation where, you know, they may be able to point to some dollar increases in the SEEK formula, but thinking about it from P to 16, I think, is something that we certainly have to look at. And if you look at it from that level, you know, there's no way that you could put our funding up against anybody across the country. We're just close to the bottom, for sure.
Not close to the bottom. My point is we're at the bottom.
We're at the bottom. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked a little bit about education and the pension bill. Are there any issues that we haven't talked about yet that are specifically important to you? And why did you decide to get involved in politics in the first place?
Well, Jasmine, let me answer your second question first. I decided to get involved in politics because I truly want to make or help lead a better life for everyone. I mean, when you're in a position like I am, you do get a chance to write legislation and seek to pass legislation and adopt legislation that will make lives of people better. And you know, to some extent, I'm very proud of what I've done. You know, I have funded a $265 million, and the state put in about half of that, $132.5 million state funding for a health disparities clinic here in Kentucky that's going to look at our health disparities across the state. There are many in Kentucky, mm-hmm. and how to treat those. You know, like I said, I've talked about the breastfeeding legislation,
right.
Mm-hmm. That I've passed. You know, other bills in areas of healthcare that I have promoted that I think will provide better access to healthcare for all Kentuckians. Mm-hmm. We talked about Senator Garvey, you know, having co-sponsored his bill for LGBTQ equality across the state, you know, so that members of the LGBTQ community who want to go to a hotel or want to go out to dinner or want to go to work, you know, are not subject to reprisals or discrimination or termination because of who they are. I mean, that's still not true here in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think, don't we only have 8 fairness ordinances or something like right. that?
It's less than 10. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why that's why I ran for public office, and that's why, you know, I want to continue to do this because I really do, at the end of the day, want to make life better for people like you and your friends and for people that, you know, I know mm-hmm. and live with and work with every day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's a good reason to do it. That's for sure. Huh. Well, you're not on the ballot this November, but you did spend a good while on the campaign trail this year. Tell us some of the state legislative candidates that you're especially excited about this year.
Well, I'm certainly excited about the Senate Democratic candidates. As a matter of fact, Robert, this weekend, this coming Friday and Saturday, you'll see me in Bowling Green and in Paducah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am going down there to campaign for our Senate Democrat candidates. They're in Bowling Green and Paducah. We got 2 excellent candidates mm-hmm. down there. And I am going to go help them out.
Excellent.
Back in 2 weeks, I'll be back here in Louisville. Campaigning for a Senate Democratic candidate here. Mm-hmm. So you'll see me across the state from now through November out there campaigning mm-hmm. For Senate Democratic candidates and for some House candidates too.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a fundraiser last night for a House candidate, an excellent young woman who's campaigning for the 88th House District. Her name mm-hmm. is Sherilyn Stevenson. I know a little bit about that district because if you know my history.
Mm-hmm. You ran for that
district. I ran for that
that's
seat.
Right, that's
and actually,
right.
I ran for that seat, just so you know, back in 2012. Mm-hmm. I've been a senator, state senator. I got elected in a special election in December 2013. Mm-hmm. Got sworn in 2014. So not since 2012. I've only been a state senator since 2014. But she's an excellent candidate. So, yes, you'll see me on the campaign trail throughout this Commonwealth for the next 3 months.
Excellent. Yeah, there's a lot of good candidates in the Senate districts across the state this year. Uh-huh. I mean, there's lots of people to be very excited about in Louisville, Lexington, and nice to hear you're going out to Western Kentucky.
Yes, I'll be there. I'll be there yeah. This weekend.
Jeannie Smith's been on our show. She's a great candidate.
Jeannie is excellent. And the Democratic Party, the state Democratic Party, is really excited
mm-hmm.
About her, and we're going to put a lot of muscle behind her.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Sherilyn was actually the very first guest that we ever had on our show.
Our first candidate that we ever had.
Well, actually, yeah. I was at her fundraiser last night and spoke at her fundraiser.
It's been amazing to watch her kind of grow up because she was very she even said this to us last time we talked to her. She's like, I was so green when I went on your show. And she's really come into her own.
Oh,
I
you should have heard her last night at her fundraiser
there
at the Heartland Clubhouse in her legislative district. She was on fire.
Yeah. I think she's going to win there, and I'm really excited to see what she's going to be able to do in Frankfort next year. Lots of good people running.
Yes.
So very good. Very good to hear that you're out there working for those people. Well, Senator Thomas, thank you so much for coming to join us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and good luck with your future shows. I'm glad you're doing this.
Yeah, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter @myoldkypod. We have a Facebook page. You can find our podcast on the podcast app of your choice. And we also have a newsletter that you can subscribe to at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter. And we have a Patreon. You can sponsor us on Patreon and help us with things like hosting fees and maybe paying Ben rent one day. That's at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.